Hello everybody and welcome back inside the Shark Tank. We are back after what feels like the world's longest extended break. We are back and raring to go. My name is Alex. I'm joined by my very good friend and co-host James. James, how are you?
Good, thank you. You come out of winter into springtime. It's all full of hope. And then it's just stripped away from you, you know, and it turns out winter continues after all.
Yeah, the sun has not quite risen on sales season yet, as people listening may now be aware. Obviously, this weekend, sale returned to action after that long break over the Six Nations period away to a very, very strong Bath side and ultimately lost 42-24. They were in touch for most of the game up until, you know, level on 60 minutes, looking like they were competing with what was, as I say, you know, Bath team, packed full of internationals. But in that last quarter, sale faded, Bath came through strong, dealt us a pretty crushing blow to come away from the wreck with absolutely nothing, not even a losing bonus point or a try bonus point, which leaves us probably justifiably eighth in the table. The table doesn't lie. Sale now quite a long way off top four, certainly a long way off a home semi-final, which probably was the ambition at the start of the year. And with a lot of introspection to do and no time really to do that with games coming thick and fast again now, the other side of the Six Nations. So we're going to chat about all of that. We've obviously got your three-word reviews. We'll talk about the game and what that means for the season, and then we'll look ahead to the Exeter game through the podcast. So, James, to kick us off, just wanted to get your thoughts on that Bath game, what you think the key sort of highlights and lowlights were, really, and how you're feeling after all of that waiting for the competitive game to come back in England and watch Sale again, and sort of to be pretty let down, I think, by the result, aren't we?
Yeah, I think, you know, look, you don't want I can understand that at Carrington, you know, they don't want the negative thoughts to seep in too much. You know, high level professional performance in any sport is virtually impossible without a level of confidence and belief that drives motivation. Yeah, that's what drives performance. And we know that when that goes in team sport and in individual sport, you know, you're not going to get the results and you can get stuck in these spirals. So I can understand why the club are going to want to sort of shut this kind of negative conversations off and try and keep it positive and, you know, obviously tell the fans to be fans and be supportive, good times and bad. So I'm going to accept all of that. But I think it's impossible to be a fan podcast and represent a lot of our listeners' thoughts here and not really, you know, feel a bit despondent a little bit about this season. You know, it's going to need something now big to turn it around. And when you look at this Bath performance, you know, you've got a Bath team that, you know, two out of the last three seasons probably would have been relegated. You know, there were kind of absolutely no hopers. Last season, they sort of came through a little bit, ended up in a, you know, reasonably strong position. But that was through really a strong second half of the season. You know, they have rebuilt this club from the absolute bottom. They would have, in any other circumstance, before COVID, and with a team at the top of the Championship that was able to be promoted, you know, Bath would have been a goner. Bath, one of the biggest clubs in Europe. And they have taken that and they have been able to rebuild it through, you know, they've got lucky that they've picked up some really good players from London Irish and Worcester, but they've still got to bind these people in together. And when you watch Bath play, it's not just Russell. They were doing this at the end of last season without him. You know, there's a fluidity to their play and they've managed to find a pack which now fronts up. You know, I think Bath, you're always going to associate them with backs that do nicely and pull apart defences. And by the way, and there's a big question mark about our defence now, but actually Bath are one of the few teams that have ripped us apart, even when they weren't playing that well, and our defence was the best in the league. So Bath have always been good going forwards. But what they're getting now is better defensively. They've even got Russell tackling. And a pack that really is physically, you know, standing up to the best of the teams. And that's what we pride ourselves in. And we're just not dominant enough in these games. And the big picture is, I'm afraid, that we've lost 8 out of our last 10 games, competitive games, and 10 out of our last 12, if you include these two sort of mid-season friendlies that we had. You know, I think it's, you've got to be the biggest optimist and biggest fan in the world to kind of ignore that level of run. You know, if that had been at the beginning of the season, there'd be panic. If that had been in the diamond years, we'd be going, we're in a relegation battle. This year, we've got no opers Newcastle that basically take the pressure off. Because otherwise, we would be in a relegation tussle this season. There isn't maybe the easier games with Worcester and London Irish having gone, but every club's in the same boat. And you look at, you know, we'll talk about Exeter soon, but they've rebuilt the club. Bath have rebuilt the club. Saracens lost every game, first like four games or something, you know, have managed to get on a run. So it's, we can turn it around, but we will need to win every single game, I think, to get in the playoffs. And I think we're going to have to win the majority of the games to take momentum into last year. And I'm worried as well that the momentum's gone out of us and that good feel around the club has gone out of us, you know, how we radiate into the media, etc. And that might be affecting also recruitment prospects, renewals, and, you know, what we're having to spend. I don't know. I don't have an inside track. But just thinking about how maybe we might have had to have overpaid for players in the past, you know, whether we're in that position again, you know, well, why sail over Bath, or, you know, why sail over Exeter? So I'm a bit despondent, and I apologise for it. But, you know, you look at that game and, you know, you saw Bath high confidence playing some beautiful rugby. Our attack was marginally better. But overall, that score, it's not a good score. That, you know, conceding 40 points, that's, it's not a good look. I mean, where are you at with it, Alex? Because you generally try and bring us back down to earth, see the bigger picture, you know, the journey that we've made under the new owners, the trajectory of travel still being positive. You always bring us back down to the earth versus the kind of panic, doom and gloom. What's the view this at the moment? How are you going to bring us all back down to earth and believing that everything's going to be okay?
Yeah, it's like a these podcasts turn into therapy sessions when it's these sort of runs of results, isn't it? It's a good point you made about, you know, I know people have been saying it, but I think it's hard for, especially like a casual fan, to really appreciate how bad this run has been, because it's been so disjointed. Because, you know, with some of those losses that were included in this run of however many losses, you've got Leinster away, and we'd all written that one off before we even started. We've got those friendlies, so it's easy to kind of go, they don't quite count. But, you know, for most of these games, we put out really strong teams, Leinster being an exception. And there was some good performances in there that gave us a bit of feel good. But ultimately, when it's mattered, we haven't won. You know, the Premiership is the key competition for us. We always knew that that Champions Cup pool was an absolute hide into nothing. So the Premiership was really where we felt like we could focus and solidify. And I think because of the Six Nations break, as well as, you know, the Champions Cup coming in and out and those friendlies, because of that, it's knocked the momentum out of us as a podcast. Obviously, you know, you have 8 weeks off. I think it's not the momentum at the club a bit. And as a fan, you don't really quite... If these results had happened week on week on week and you were going down to the stadium every 2 weeks to watch it, I feel like we'd almost be even more worried than we probably are. And I think we're right to be worried, because this is a team that's gone from comfortably second last season, definitely one of the two best teams in the league, you know, firing on all cylinders, real positivity around the club, starting to fill up the stadium, to a team that, you know, we started off this season with some okay performances in the Premier Rugby Cup, but we lost against the Prem sides, so we didn't get through to the semis. We then kind of stuttered our way to a decent start. And, you know, let's not forget that we were top of the table a few rounds ago. You know, round 8, we were top of the table, and then we've started sliding down ever since. We're now in 8th, and the league is incredibly competitive this year. So that is a big point to make. You know, we're 8th, but at the moment, we're also on 32 points and fourth place we're on 40. So we're 2 wins off being in fourth. And that team in fourth is Exeter, who play next week. So that speaks to just how competitive the league's got. And The other thing that we should probably throw in here is the amount of injuries we've had this season have been really unusual. I think, you know, not just for us as a club, but also around the league. I don't think you've seen that level of injury. We lost some big, big players in key positions. But that has exposed, I think, all the worries that maybe your more negative fan would have. And you can split our fan base into, well, you can definitely split it into the really positive and the really negative people, because you go on the Facebook group and that's pretty much it, where there is. It's either the world is ending, sack everyone, and what's the point in the club anymore? Or why are you all complaining about everything? Stay with the team and support them. And there's probably a lot of silent majority in the middle who don't get as much airtime, which is where I'm trying to get to. But I'm going through the same cycles as well as kind of all those people, in that I don't think it's horrendous. And I don't think, you know, you've got to remember this team was in the Premiership final last year and nearly won it. You know, we were in touch in a Premiership final in June or May last year. You know, we're not a terrible side. This isn't like a long-term decline. You know, you felt like the years under the end of the Kennedy ownership, you genuinely felt like, are we going to have a club? You know, I remember going in that season where we nearly got relegated, just every game was depressing, and you almost didn't want to go because it was that bad. I don't think we're quite at that level. We've still got, you know, let's be honest, we've still got George Ford at 10. That's unheard of for, you know, so we're not going back to those horrendous dark times that I think the club went through. And we always should probably remember how close we came to kind of being in the Championship and maybe not being a team anymore. I don't think that was ever that far away. But also, this group has got much higher standards than that and has had the investment to have much higher standards than that. And ultimately, you know, I think they, as much as anyone, will want to be held to account. And, you know, it's not nice to hear, but as a fan, you go, there's two ways of looking at it. There's either, we were in a Premiership final last year, don't worry about it, we'll be all right, we're still building. Or, we were in a Premiership final last year, what on earth has happened? And I think that's the question they've got to answer, and that we can try and come up with theories too. But if you're going to blame injuries, every team in the league has injuries. If you're going to blame, you know, loss of coaching staff, it's sort of, that's what you have to deal with as a professional sports club. And I think what's making that worse is that our style of play in quite similar to the kind of Leicester and what England went through before this Six Nations and are still probably going to go through, we don't play exciting rugby. So when we lose, people get very, very sort of focused on the fact that we're not throwing the ball around and we're kicking it away. And ultimately, it's whether you're strong enough to kind of deal with that as a coaching staff and as a, you know, ownership group, as a club. Because, you know, if we want to play this style of rugby, you have to win. And otherwise, you are going to get crucified, aren't you?
I think you've hit the nail on the head of where a lot of the fan base are. And I think it's important that I'm sure the club have some awareness of this and they have a confidence in the way that they want to play. But I remember going to Hayward Road before the good times arrived. You know, you'd be in the bottom third of the table, but you play some great rugby. I mean, you know, back in the day, you play some great rugby, score lots of tries, and there was that kind of thing of, well, you know, if we don't score enough, if we don't win, then we might, you know, you're still entertaining the crowd. And I think these days with try bonus points, there is actually a real value in it. You actually have sorry listeners, to bring you back to Lynn Rugby Club, like I always do. But this season, you know, they found themselves in a national league. This is a village in Cheshire, right? And they basically just decided this year, sod it. You know, we're just not going to be able to do your kind of structured play rugby, you know, going through lots of set piece and all this kind of stuff and heavy ground. They basically like, let's just throw it around. Let's just try and score four tries. So even if we let in 60, if we score 28 and we go away with a bonus point, and actually we've scored 28, good luck, you know, to any team scoring much more than 35, and then you can get two losing bonus points. And I just think we've taken that off the table. Now, that must be a strategic decision, and it's fine when you're winning games. But when you're not, we are winning almost as many as the teams above us. It's, losing to Bath has changed things. Before we went into this weekend, we had the same number of wins as teams three downwards or four downwards in the league, fourth downwards. So other teams are winning the same amount as us, but they are getting more bonus points, especially more try bonus points. And, you know, we scored 3 tries this time. That felt like quite a lot. You know, in old Sale, 3 tries would have been enough to win the game because our defence would not have let in more than 20 points. So you'd win the game. So we're unravelling in both directions. And what I would like to understand, I suppose, is are we trying to expand our game? And by doing so, you let in more. You know, you're not playing in the same parts of the pitch, you know, and or you are playing in different parts of the pitch. And so you're just opening yourself up to basically conceding more, giving away more penalties, turnover ball, people score more tries. Because if this is trying to change our game to be more expansive, I think people and people understand that's not going to be a during season transition. I think people could get their heads around that. And especially understanding that our defence coach left this time last year. And, you know, that also takes time to learn new systems and things like that as well. But I just get the sense of, actually, no, we're just going to be the same Sale. There's lots of discussion at the moment around continuity. And I agree, continuity usually breeds success. So, you know, I'm not dismissing that at all. It's continuity in coaching staff, continuity in playing staff. Everyone knows where they stand. But trust can get lost pretty quickly in that sort of scenario, you know, if you keep losing and that you just keep losing, you know, your resilience in that continuity goes and, as I say, your opportunity for performance drops. So, you know, I want to try and maybe understand, are we trying to expand our game? Or are we just trying to do the same game as you did before, but just a lot worse, you know, or maybe with a lot less luck? I don't know. There's probably multiple factors. But there's no doubt about it. I just wanted to get your view. Let's talk about the game specifically here. You know, there was some nice attacking moments. You know, obviously Tom Rowe, but Manu Tuilagi, you know, it's actually been quite rare to see him, you know, actually break through defences and score tries and things like this. So there were some nice moments, especially in the first half. What was your view on that? And did you see an expansion of the game in that first half?
Yeah, I think what really impressed me in that first half, and I thought we played really well and got on the wrong side of some pretty questionable refereeing calls in that first half. Now, that's why we lost the game, but I think we would have been ahead and probably more ahead than we were if maybe those... I called them 50-50s on Twitter, and a lot of people pointed out that they weren't even near 50-50, but I didn't want to put that on... commit that to Twitter. But I thought what we showed was a really good integration of a very talented playmaker in George Ford back into our system very quickly. Bear in mind, George played pretty much every minute for England in the Six Nations, you know, didn't spend a lot of time off the field and has been in that environment for 6-7 weeks pretty continuously. So for him to come back in, slot straight in and create a lot of very good attacking opportunities and, you know, I mean, assist for Manu's try, I think. There's a couple of breaks, both in the first and second half, where, you know, his passes were just fizzed right across people, completely broke open the back defence. So I thought we created those opportunities and found gaps. And you know, thought Rob Dupree had a decent game at 13 in that regard as well from an attacking point. So there was definitely sort of highlights in that. But what we seemed to struggle with, particularly later on into the game, you know, you think it was 24 all at 60 minutes, didn't score any points in the last quarter, was that Bath pack, just as you kind of alluded to, completely overran us. And that's the big worry that, and I think probably really the reason we lost this game is if you look at our pack, you know, we've got a guy who signed 2 weeks ago on the bench, covering Locke. We've got some brilliant performers in that pack, but we are down to pretty bare bones. You know, James Harper at 22, might be wrong, sorry, James, but ridiculously young for a tight head prop, starting a tight head prop, backed up by Asher, who was playing in England in the 20s. You know, at hooker, you've obviously got Tommy Taylor covering the bench, Lee Cowan-Dickey, first game back from injury. You know, he was injured during the England Six Nations period. At lock, you've got Josh Beaumont, who is kind of a hybrid lock, starting up. And then in the back row, we're missing to both Curries and Dan Dupria, who probably, you know, arguably form two, if not three, of our starting first choice back row. So it's been a real, there's been an injury crisis over the season. I think that injury crisis isn't happening in the back. So when people are saying, well, you've still got George Ford, you've got Mae Tuilagi, that's not a weakened squad, and it isn't in the backs. We've probably got our first choice back line out. But in the forwards, we are really struggling, and that's where Bath dominated us. And that was the frustrating thing, that I think, you know, 3-4 years, or well, at any time during Sale's history, we very rarely had a forward pack who can't front up and compete. And what's happened this season is we've consistently had a forward pack that have been beaten up by other teams. And as I say, that comes back to injuries, but I think we've not quite got that depth right in the squad mix. And I think that is what people are starting to kind of go down the route of. You know, we've got Nick Schoner, who is a great player when he plays, but has spent a lot of time in the last couple of years injured, which has exposed the fact that we haven't got another tight head, you know, of over 24 to back him up, which is what you need really in this league. So there's a lot of trust in youth, and there's a lot of building going on in that forward pack. And we said before in this podcast that our academy produces very good backs, but for a long time hasn't produced good forwards, and that is starting to happen. You know, you talk about the likes of Ashraf Okafor, Ben Bamber, obviously got called up to the England Saxon squad over the break. You've got Sam Dugdale, who I know has had a bit of a journey, but is performing really well, and I thought had a quite a good game against Bath in a losing cause. We've got other players coming through all over the pack, and they are coming through, but they're at England under 20 stage. They're not established players, and what we seem to be missing is that kind of 25, 26-year-old established Premiership player, because we've got the experienced guys at the other end. You know, you like Sir Tommy Taylor, sort of towards the end of career, Nick Schoner, Simon McIntyre, Josh Beaumont to some extent with his age, not necessarily his caps, but we haven't got that middle ground. And I think that was the thing that really hit home in that Bath game, because I've gone on a massive tangent here, but we scored three tries and we ran out of steam towards the end of the game, and we looked well in it, but I think the running out of steam came from the forwards getting beat up, and that meant that, you know, and it's a problem that's happened this season. You talked about bonus points. We've had three try bonus points and one losing bonus point this season, and if you look at the teams around us, that's the only team with less try bonus points is Newcastle, who've got one. Every other team has got more than us, and losing bonus points, the only other team, well, no team has less than us. Exeter have also got one, but they've got seven try bonus points and eight wins, so that's why they're in fourth and we're in eighth. So it's interesting, because I think had we, and it comes back to this point of, do you like the kind of attacking rugby and therefore you want to see that, or do you like winning? But at the moment, even when we're winning, we're not entertaining quite as much as I think our fans maybe want us to, or certain sections of our fan base want us to. So we're winning narrowly. Look at our wins, you know, 5 points, 2 points, 2 points, you know. Our biggest win was Newcastle, obviously not unexpected with the sort of form of the season. But then we're losing, we're shipping 40 points to Bath, 40 points to Exeter, 36 points to Quins, and 32 points to Gloucester, who at that point hadn't won in, I think, 9 or 10 games in the Premiership. So this is where the frustration is. And just on the Bath game, you know, there's a few little highlights of attack. As I say, George Ford, I thought, managed it really nicely. It was some good shape. But ultimately, we shipped 42 points, and your attack is can be as good as you want. But if you ship 42 points, you're going to win very few games, and Sale are going to win no games, because we don't score 42 points. The most points we've scored in one game all season in the Premier is 40 against Newcastle. So until we kind of, I think you've either got to push on and try and keep going with the attack, or you've got to shore up the defence. And we're kind of doing neither at the moment. And maybe that comes to the point that this is a transition season and we're trying to work on the attack, and we know we need to work on the defence, but we're not going to be able to fix it before the end of the season, which is fine. But it does mean we're going to finish in bottom half of the table. If we carry on as we are, we're not going to get top four. We're not going to get Champions Cup, probably, realistically. We might sneak in, but we'll be in a horrendous pool again and we'll be out of it. So, yeah, I think that was my sort of take on the whole game. I think there's some positives in the attack, and I think the defence is still physical. But I think the negative is the defence is leaky. People are finding gaps. The forward pack are getting battered. You see that in like Battenborn completely took us apart. We're not getting any bonus points as a result of those two things. And then all of that has been exacerbated by some pretty poor refereeing decisions on the weekend and some horrendous sort of injury runs for key players and key positions. And all of that leads you to, you know, feeling pretty despondent about the state of Sale, doesn't it? Sorry, you've asked me to cheer you up and I feel like
I'm quite realistic and not very cheerful. Yeah, none of us went into this season after last season thinking that it was going to be the way it's turning out right now. So we're all just in a bit of readjustment. And I think a bit of a shock because of this gap that you mentioned before. You know, we kind of, it doesn't feel that long ago we were top of the table playing not great, but winning. And suddenly we've fallen completely off a cliff. And we know how bad the Champions Cup impact can be there, especially if you end up in a top group like ours. You just don't win any games and that just sets in. But just on the style of play, because I think our listeners want to hear about this, it seems to be a big thing for them, is, you know, we've kind of got the Steve Borthwick Leicester model, which won League 1 year and has been kind of mid-table all the rest of the time, including this year. They lost to Gloucester at the weekend. You've got the Saracens, they're also similar types of teams as us. And Exeter, and we'll talk about them very shortly after I hand back to you on three-word reviews to preview the next game. But it's really interesting because if you look at the models there, Leicester have been disrupted because they've had their whole coaching staff stolen by England. So they understandably have kind of dropped off a little bit here. And then you've got Saracens who... they don't go through big renewal moments. I mean, clearly replacing Farrell and probably Billy Vunipola is going to be a big moment. But they renew as they go along, right? They know that Ben Earl can play at eight. They signed Tom Willis last season to play at eight. He's the next one, you know. Gonzalez can play at eight if they need, you know. So they're always planning and mapping ahead. And there's never a drop off. Then you've got the Exeter model where, you know, they really had a group of individuals that came through together. We've got a couple of them at Sale at the moment. And you could say they kind of reached their peak and have gone past their peak. And some of them have gone to earn good money in France. Some of them have gone for gone to Sale for whatever reason. But they've had to do a complete like reorganization. And halfway through last season, they basically decided, Hogg, you're not playing because you're not going to be here next year. We're going to pick Hodge at fullback, right? And so there's that kind of decision made. You know, would we do that with Manu Tuilagi now? That's what Exeter did last year. We're not going to be here. We're just going to pick, you know, Marcy White at 12 because he's here. So, I mean, you've seen Exeter make some of these big decisions and they've done a whole restructure. Nobody fancied them in the beginning of this year. And they're sitting fourth in the league, and we'll get on to them in a bit. But my point is, the clubs where we are in the similar model of playing style either have clear reasons why they're not like, at the top of the table, or that they have been successful in sort of reorganising, restructuring the club, and they entertain their fans. There's an entertainment value, and I'll tell you this because I go to watch Saracens quite a lot, and they are in this boring style, but they score a hell of a lot of tries. They score a lot of tries, and you mentioned Exeter scoring a lot of tries as well. And you know, they play in a structured way, but they know how to move the ball. They don't make many mistakes, and both of those teams score lots of tries. So there's something missing, even with a George Ford in play at the moment this season for us, where the fluidity is lacking. And even last season, when we were winning a lot, we were dominant in defence, we were dominant in collisions, and that's how we dominated, really, honestly, a lot of our opposition until we came up against Saracens. But we still lacked some fluidity at times, especially in attack. So the essay question for the for the club. It has to be now. At some point this season, we either need to go on a run and win every game, or there's going to be a moment where we're not going to reach the top four. And at that point, we need to start planning for next year, and on both coaching and on the player side. And that's not me advocating for change of personnel, but there does have to be some sort of change of the status quo to get us back to where we were, and preferably entertaining fans. So that's what I would finish on there. Have you got some three-word reviews, Alex, to take us through? Or?
Yeah, I absolutely have. And thank you, everyone, for sending these in, as always. It's really good, genuinely just really good to see what fans are thinking. It helps us work out, you know, if we're missing anything. So thank you to everyone. So a few themes this week. Now, officials, we should touch on briefly at some point, but a few on that. Brothers the Boat, Ref Beach Sharks, Salop Sharks, Officials Didn't Help, and Justin Holmes forward pass try. I think before I come back into those, James, it feels to me as though there were some horrendous refereeing decisions. The try, first try was definitely a forward pass. But at one point, Ben Spencer literally knocks it on in front of the official and he doesn't give it. Probably didn't cost us the game, but no less frustrating as a Sale fan. Would you agree?
Yeah, and I think this season we have been on the wrong side of the ref more. And I think some of that's, you know, Ben Curry's, you know, not been played as much. He has a good relationship with referees. And so does Tom Curry, actually. You know, we are missing some really big, important players to us. And I think that, you know, I think refs factor this in. And plus, places like the Rec, I mean, in Gloucester, I mean, you don't get anything. They're so close to the pitch, the fans, that, you know, they're on the ref the whole time. And yes, there's a professionalism to it, but I think there's a lot of unconsciousness to some of the decisions that are made, honestly. I don't think it's kind of like out to get Sale or just really shit refs. I think it's the home factor plays a big part, especially at Bath and Gloucester. So I'm not making excuses for them. I just think this is par for the road. And if we want it to be a top two team this year for a home semi, which we all want it to be, you have to go to Bath and win.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the other point, just thinking about it, is that because we don't play a very attacking style of rugby, refs want to see attacking rugby, don't they? They want to reward people who are trying stuff. And that's why you end up with flat to forward passes not getting called, because if it's marginal, benefit of the doubt with the attacking team. And probably our problem is that we don't play that much attacking rugby, and we have a bit of a reputation as quite a negative team. And that means they don't want to reward us for when we do things well. Now, the way to get around that is to be squeaky clean, like Saracens are, but we never are. So I do think that comes into it. But anyway, jump back into the three-word reviews. So there's also a bit of harking back. So Lyndon, good old days, which did make me laugh, because, you know, this is like when we started this podcast, and we just used to come on and bemoan everything every week and then celebrate the one victory we got a year. Barry Williamson, think this was my favourite this week. Top four wrecked, REC apostrophe D. Very good, Barry. Just deserves a shout out. David Davies, change needed soon, which I know a couple along those lines as well. I think Moreland's rugby dad, Sanderson, under scrutiny, which is probably worth discussing as well. And then finally, to finish us off and sort of sum up of where we are at the season, O'Reilly won, no Twickenham return, and Mark Cole, confidence looks shot. And I think that, you know, these things feed into each other, but, you know, the confidence in the team doesn't look great. That's because we're on a losing run. We're not winning. We're not attacking well, defending badly. And that's putting pressure on the coaches and Alex Sanderson. And I think it's interesting that early on in Sanderson's tenure, a lot of people were, some people were very positive and some people were saying if Diamond had done this run, we'd have all been slating him, which was true. And it seems like now the real target of people's eyes seems to be our coaches. And whether that is, you know, Paul Deacon in and out of vogue as to whether he's getting grief for the attack, depending on how it's functioning. Obviously, a lot of people highlighting losing Mike Forshaw, and we're starting to see the impact of that probably. A couple of mentions for Dorian West as well in our three-word reviews. So, you know, in terms of the big picture, and where we go from here, there's probably a genuine question that a lot of fans are asking, and it's only right that therefore we ask it on this podcast. Is Alex Sanderson the right man for Sale? And are the coaches the right people for Sale? Now, before we go into that, I'll say I absolutely think Alex Sanderson is the right man for Sale. And I don't like asking it, but I want to ask it to see whether you agree with me, James, or whether, because I haven't seen anyone say, I don't think Sanderson's the right man. I think we all love him. So if we sort of deal with that and move on, then the follow-up question is, do we need a change in coaching staff?
Wow. So this is part two, right? No, I mean, I do think that Sanderson, you know, he was kind of, he's the golden boy returning home, isn't he? And I think he's been above criticism, honestly, from 99% of fans since he's been here. And, you know, taking us to the final last year was almost, a bit like this is the way it was always meant to be. Diamond, who didn't get any of the credit for, you know, his role in sort of taking us in that direction, which we were on, when he left the club. But I would say that he's absolutely the right man for the job. I think he has a philosophy that's really important. You know, you need to have a leadership philosophy. You need to believe in it. I think he'll put a lot of pressure on himself to keep learning and keep improving. He's the first person who says, you know, I'm not as good in this area as someone else. He has a level of self-awareness, which I think is super important in a leader. He made the decision to keep the coaching staff in place when he came in rather than bring in a lot of change. And I think I trust him to make the call if and when he does that, either way at the moment. He has enough cash in the bank to see him not just do this season or next season as well. I think we'd have to literally get relegated next year for him to lose his job. I mean, he has enough cash in the bank. He's a local lad. He's an excellent forward and defence coach. You know, maybe he needs to be holding his coaching staff a bit more to account. He can assert his authority now a little bit more, I would say. And I think he'll be feeling the pressure from the owners, you know, who are so ambitious. You know, that ambition just flows through the club. So he'll be feeling he's letting his side of the bargain down. So I don't think we need to pile on here from that perspective, like calling for people's jobs and anything. But I do think we've been right to say we're not entertaining fans. We're no longer winning. And the defence has gone a little bit worse. The attack's got a little bit better. But, it's kind of still not good and fluent enough in that regard. And so I think criticism is still good. But I think calling for all up ends change and for people to lose their jobs, I honestly think we're a mile away from that. Just a few months ago, we were there, all best laid plans and all that. You know, who knew that George Ford would be playing every single game for England after the World Cup and even in the World Cup? Who knew that, Ben Curry would be injured all year, Tom Curry would have, potentially a career-ending injury. You know, these things, Dan Dupria, Jean-Luc, they're both without both of them for long periods this season. So I think any club losing that level of player would be tricky. Johnny Hill out for the season as well. I mean, this is not messing around. These are internationals. So it's not excuses. We can criticise. For the first time Sanderson's been in place, we've seen a downturn. The pressure is on Sanderson as the leader of the coaching group to turn it around or to communicate now with fans about, well, you know, if the dream's over for this season, what are we looking to get out of it? What's the plan for next year? Let's get these renewals, over the line and announced. We can start looking forward to next year. Start talking about some positives for sure. So, yeah, he has to lean into it. I think for the first time here, I don't think he can just sit there with his kind of, his meditation and his yoga and be just completely immune to it. I think there has to be some recognition. There will definitely be that internally. There always would have been. I think for the first time, there's probably some external recognition a little bit here. But it's not panic stations. It's not guns to the head of the coaching staff. It's trust our lad, Sanderson, to make the call on the coaching team. He sees them every day. He sees them in their job. He knows how good the coaching staff they are. He knows the player groups are so empowered at Sale that I'm pretty sure if they'd lost faith in Deacon or West or wherever, they could be going for a confidential conversation with Sanderson, and that would be completely acceptable and received positively. And therefore, you know, just because we're losing doesn't mean the whole system's rotten. It just means that there has to be some engagement on, well, okay, well, we thought we were going to get better this year and we've actually got worse. So some things we've changed didn't go to plan, and some things that we kept the same should have been changed. But that's the same in any profession, any walk of life. So no, I think that's a step too far for me. I'll withhold the right to criticise and be a bit negative, but you've got to trust people to make the right decisions. If we get relegated next year, different kettle of fish.
Yeah, I don't think it'll come to that, but you know, you never know. Let's not jinx it. But I completely agree with you. I think it's a very, very good summary of where we're at and how we deal with it. Because, you know, we've been spoiled as a fan base with getting to a Premiership final last year, and we were in the top four, you know, 3 years before that from nowhere. So, you know, we've got to enjoy the highs and not, you know, criticise when the lows, because you can't win the league every year unless you're Saracens, and they only really did that when they were breaking the salary cap. So even now, you know, the league is too competitive. So I completely agree with you. I think it's definitely not panic stations, but we need a big response, don't we? And that starts next week on Easter Sunday at home to Exeter. First home game for a long, long time. I think our last one was La Rochelle, which was, you know, middle of January. So it's been a hot minute, if nothing else. We obviously welcome an Exeter side who are sit fourth in the league. As James has alluded to, they've rebuilt really well from losing some, you know, big, big names and some real key parts of that team as well, with the likes of Sam Simmons. You know, finally, we don't have to listen to everyone saying Sam Simmons should get picked for England every week when he's scoring, you know, 40 tries a game for Exeter. But as I say, they've brought through some really exciting talent, really blended, you know, the academy kids with a lot of experience. Started off the season by battering Saracens, had battered us in the away game, 43-0. We didn't even put a point on them. James, you've talked a bit about what Exeter have done in that rebuild, but it's been a really strong season for them, hasn't it? And how do we beat them? Do you see it being a Sale win? Do you see it being an Exeter win? And just how big a game is this? Because I think it's obvious to say we need to win it, but it really does kind of, you know, Bath left us a little bit adrift. We lose this game, we're probably completely adrift of the pack, aren't we? So, you know, how do you see it going against Exeter? And do you think that, you know, this is the biggest game of the season so far?
Yeah, and we know, we say that every week. But if we don't beat Exeter, that's another team, a bit like Bath potentially as well, who are just beyond us, you know, in terms of being able to catch them up. So, you know, there's nothing to play for now. You know, we need to win enough games to stay ahead of Gloucester, I suppose, and qualify for the Champions Cup. That's really important commercially. The big picture for us is that now, really. You took it for granted before because 8 teams out of 10 qualified for the Champions Cup in the Premiership. Well, Gloucester beat Leicester at the weekend. They've just won the Premiership Rugby Cup. They've got all the momentum. You know, I think they're still 6 points behind us. But, I mean, we were top of the league at round 8. And now we're fighting to qualify for the Champions Cup. So I think there's suddenly a lot at stake. Like, you know, there's pride and there's this European qualification. I think there's a bit of reality probably landing here in Carrington. And I think they're going to come out, and I think the local lads especially are going to be really proud here. And I would pick a very heavy squad of local boys to go, even if they're a bit younger, to go out there and just do the club proud. Talking about Exeter, 2 really big changes. One is, yeah, headcount turnover. Sam Simmons, Dave Ewers, Harry Williams, Janice Kirsten, Jack Knoll, Stuart Hogg, Sean O'Brien, Ben Moon, Ian Witten, Salomon Akata, Joe Simmons, Mike Williams, Luke Cowan-Dickey, Jack Maunder, Tom Hendrickson. They've all gone. The season before, Johnny Hill had also gone, a few others. It's absolutely nutsville, right? And incoming, Joe Hawkins, okay. you know, somebody with a lot of talent from Wales, but 20 years of age. They signed Ethan Roots from the Ospreys, you know, who again, no one had ever heard of really in the from Premiership circles before he arrived. Ross Vincent from Exeter University. He's gone on to play for Italy in the Six Nations, but no one had heard of him. And someone called Matt Postlethwaite as well ended up down there. He hasn't played much yet this year, that has to be said. But the point is, they really made like about four signings of either people on potential or people who were like Ethan Roots has been around the block a little bit, mid to late 20s. And everyone else has been promoted from the academy. But they really started their transition last year where people like Harvey Skinner, you know, I'll go through a couple of them. People who are now going, oh, yeah, they're first choice at Exeter. Well, hang on a minute. You know, Tom Wyatt, Josh Hodge, Dan Johns, Ben Hammersley. These people hadn't made their debut outside of Premiership Rugby Cup by the middle of last season. You know, they've got Faye Waboso, obviously, has come through now playing for England. You know, and they've been without Ollie Devoto pretty much for the whole season. Niall Armstrong, Tom Cairns have been at scrum half because Stu Townsend been injured. Sam Maunders out of luck and Jack Maunders moved on. You know, Richard Capstick and Greg Fisalau. You know, these are people like Greg Fisalau, Russ Toomer. They start every week for Exeter and probably in a mix for 2027 World Cup for England. This is extraordinary planning and trust in their youth. And they still play pretty much the same way. The big change that they've made on the paddock is that kind of carrying in close quarters in the 5 metres. Because obviously you get held up over the line now. It's a dropout underneath the posts rather than a 5 metre scrum. That really has been a game changer for Exeter. And they're having to play wider, frankly. But they still don't make any mistakes in the middle part of the pitch. They still kick like a lot of teams do, and certainly we do, in that middle part of the pitch, kind of Borthwick way of playing, zero risk where a mistake would turn over, etc., would be high risk. Once they get into other areas, they play pretty expansive rugby now. You know, and they're probably not paying an awful amount of money for Harvey Skinner. We're probably paying quite a bit more for George Ford, but they're investing their cost really wisely across the pitch. And I have to say I'm a bit in awe of the rebuild that they have done. You know, this whole generation have moved on, and they've rebuilt in a 12-month window, and are going to make the playoffs. I imagine this year. I bet you they make the playoffs. That is extraordinary belief in a system of playing where the skill levels, honestly, are really, really high. And yes, someone like, you know, Henry Slade's had a brilliant career and a brilliant season, it has to be said. But, you know, he's been allowed to step into a leadership role. But all these other players have just stepped into the system that existed and are performing at a really, really high level. And it'll be the same with replacing Owen Farrell and stuff at Saracens. So, you know, for us, we're going to have to be physically absolutely on it, you know, and for 80 minutes. And I think we need a level of desperation to win the game that hopefully it's that fine line between giving away penalties and making mistakes. But we're going to need to be on the edge because otherwise we're not going to turn around where we're at on this run against a team like Exeter. You know, and if we just try and play our game really, really structured, I just think we're going to do it less well and we'll still make mistakes anyway. I think and I'm not talking about throwing around the ball. I'm talking about lying on the wrong side sometimes for a little bit longer than you would do. Yet we need to take just that little bit of extra risk. And I know I'll come on next week and be like, oh, these silly mistakes. You can't win a game with giving a 25. You know, you got to be sensible on the pitch, right? You know, if you start getting pinged, you've got to start being a bit more honest. But we've got to put our head where it hurts and we've just got to hope for the best. And I'd say man for man, even in the pack, with all our injuries, at home, we can beat Exeter. It's just with the context we're going into the game with that makes it a little bit more difficult. And honestly, for Tuolangi and Rob Dupria, I've never been 100% sold on that from a defensive perspective. Never 100%. I know we got to the final and, you know, and all the rest of it last year, but we've got to remember that Rob Duplair played at 10 a lot of last season, and Sam James played at 13, and Manu Tuilagi's basically injured most of the seasons anyway. So we found a way without them. I'm not 100% sold to the answer this time. I think they'll go again this week because, you know, gel a bit more. They should be, you know, more together. The system should work a little bit better. You know, George Ford will manage the game excellently. One area that I'd be thinking about, and I'll ask you the question now on who we should be selecting, but I would be tempted to give Rafi a go. You know, if he is definitely fully fit. I think Wars had a tough year this year, having been, I think he was my player of the season last year. I think he's struggling with burnout. I think he's been overplayed, even with the break. I think mentally he is fatigued. And I know he'll bring a lot of buzz and a lot of energy, but I just think now's the time to roll a bit of the Rafi Quirk dice.
Yeah, I completely agree, because I think the thing that Rafi brings is he does still have that element of control that you do get with Gus War, but in the opposition half, I think there's a lot more jeopardy. And that does result in mistakes, and it results in turnovers, and it has always done, and it especially will do at the moment because it hasn't been playing that much. But it also excites people, and I think that's a big almost concession to the sort of attacking style that, you know, we've got Rafi in, and that's going to excite you. And I completely agree. I mean, Gus War was sensational last year, still a brilliant player in our system. Struggled a bit this year, but, you know, been behind a pack that's not helping him out a massive amount. You know, he's got, even when you look at, you know, he did so well with Rob Freer last year and George Ford when he came in. And I think, as you say, there's a really good player there who there needs to be a bit of competition for the shirts probably to push him on to the next level. And we know it's there, and you know it comes back, and form waxes and wanes, but we've got two excellent young scrum halves in Gus and Rafi. We made a big decision when we lost Faf to basically put our faith in these guys. So, you know, we should use both of them, not just, you know, shouldn't. Obviously, sometimes there is a natural first choice, and I think last year with the way Gus was playing, he was natural first choice. But it shouldn't be a first choice in that scenario, because they both have really, really good elements to their game that can massively impact the rest of the team. So I agree with you. I think, as you say, Ford, Tuilagi, RDP is probably going to be the three that rolls out. Someone in our Twitter mentions who I can't remember who, so apologies, and I will shout you out at some point. Mention the name of Sam Bedloe. I don't think we know 100% where he's up to, because he was a massive part of our early success this season. He genuinely was probably our player of the kind of month for a couple of months in a row in October and November. So be interesting to see whether he comes back in. Sam James still not getting game time, and I think we're all a bit, you know, frustrated with that, because we know how good he is. We're up against Henry Slade, probably one of the best 13s in the league, if not the best. So he is going to attack that channel, and he will make the defenders make decisions. And I think we saw that against Bath, that Finn Russell and Cam Redpath were able to isolate Tuilagi and Rob Dupree and kind of make them make decisions, and Bath were able to get through. And then had the power runners in, you know, Cock and Singer had a good game to finish it off. So I agree with you, though. I think we were at home. We're against an Exeter side who have done fantastic things, and you know, your preview sets that in context really well. But first game at home for ages. Hopefully a big crowd with the Easter weekend. So get yourselves down if you can, because I do think there's going to be a lot of passion on display. And there's so many narratives going into this game. You've got us on a horrendous losing streak. You've got a really exciting Exeter side. You know, you've also got the fact that we lost 43-0 away to Exeter. So it's going to be a big, big sort of push for revenge in the squad for that. You know, whatever people say about one game at a time, and, you know, different... No player forgets being on the end of a hammering like that. So I'm with you in that I'm almost optimistic that there will be a good performance to come out of this. And it is a tough ask. This isn't going to be a game where we can kind of go back and, you know, play Newcastle at home and it's an easy win. But I think there's a real chance to get a real confidence win with a proper Northern performance. Restore a bit of bit of love for the team in the way we played, but also just restore a bit of confidence to the squad and the fans with a win. So hopefully that is what happens. Now we'll come on to next week and see whether that has happened. But James, very quickly, score prediction for the weekend. How do you think it's going to play out?
Back the lads, back the spirit. Sale 29, Exeter 28.
Oh, that is not going to be good for the nerves, but very good for the table. I can see a performance coming here, so I'm going to go with Sale 25, Exeter 15. I think there's going to be a lot of passion, and I think we're going to hopefully keep them at bay. But we will see. So, yeah, the game is on Easter Sunday at the Salford Community Stadium, as it's now known. I keep referring to it as the AJ Bell, so apologies if I've done that at any point over the last hour or so. So do get yourselves down if you can. Just quickly on Northwest Rugby, and I think it's worth shouting it out because there've been a few success stories. So there isn't any other games across kind of that one up to this weekend as far as I know. So apologies if I'm missing any. We've obviously had a few weeks, so I'm not going to go through every result, but just picking out some highlights. Lim have had some really good results, as James has said, but they beat Sheffield Tigers at home 43-24 as James punches the air, for those of you not watching video, if you don't record it. But they also won at home to Otley and Hull. So they've had a really good season and put themselves in a really good position for hopefully staying up in that league and to get out of that league. I think they're fourth from bottom at the moment. It's not guaranteed, but they have got Billingham, who are down there at home on the weekend of the 13th of April. So that's a massive game. If they win that, I think they'll probably stay up. And also massive congratulations to Sedgley Park, who beat Cinderford at home in the weekend just gone, the 23rd, which means they are staying up in that one next season. A real genuine feat as well coming up from that too. They had a really good start to the season. They were on a bit of a horrendous run over the Six Nations period, lost quite a few in a row, but that win has secured their place. It's very well done to them. And Sale FC have managed to pull themselves back from the brink of relegation, so they should hopefully be in that one next season as well, albeit not mathematically confirmed, including a win over Sedgley Park and a bonus point win away at top of the table Rams the weekend before that, which just makes no sense, but shows what a good league National One is. So we'll get another Sale FC Sedgley Park derby next season, which would be good. That is kind of a very high level North West Rugby roundup. Coldy still fighting it out in the Championship. Not great results, but did beat Coventry at home and drew away to London Scottish. Preston Grasshoppers finally won a couple of home games after me noticing they kept losing, beat Hull Ionians and Huddersfield at home. And Fylde have had a really good few results, beat Hull Ionians 45-17 at home this weekend just gone, but also won away at Huddersfield and beat Sheffield at home by a point, and did beat Lynn 50-28 at Lynn. So James won't mind me mentioning that, but I've already given him a shout out. So it's been a mixed time for Northwest Rugby, but there is some feel good stories in there, and hopefully Sale Sharks is going to be one of those feel good stories as we go into this weekend at home to Exeter. That's pretty much everything. I know there's a few signings that have happened. We'll do them in another pod, chat about those because we're already overrunning. But that's probably everything from me. James, anything else from you before we head off?
Nothing from me. But get yourselves down there. There's always something to play for. Northern Pride is one of them. So let's get down there, support the lads in their time of need, all right? We can turn this around.
Completely agree. Thank you very much, James. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Enjoy the game if you're there this weekend. Enjoy it on TV if you're watching it. But try and get yourselves down if you can. And we'll come back to you next week, hopefully on the back of an upturn in form, an upturn in fortunes, and a victory against Exeter.